What's up, everybody? Welcome to Full Draw Friday number 82. That's Austin. I'm Canyon. We're talking access this week, more specifically public land access. We're going to get into a little series on how to get in and out without spooking deer and do it the best you can. So, like I said, this week we're going to start public. Next week we'll get into private land access. So if you're a private land guy, don't go away, because you can learn something from the public land stuff too. It's going to set a foundation for what you can do on private, and then you just have more options on private for what you can do. So I figured we might as well start with public, and that's right up your alley. So I'm going to let you take off after I mention our partner for the episode, Rack's Big Game Supplements. Don't forget about them, guys. If you are using minerals or any kind of blocks, protein blocks especially, go to racksmineral.com and check them out. Use the discount code FULLDRAW, that's all caps, for 15% off. All right, I'm throwing this over to you right off the bat here, because public land access, we talk about it a lot. It's one of the most important things that I think is often overlooked, and it's right up your alley. So why don't you kick us off here with kind of give us a baseline of what it is, what we're looking at here.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, you know, even if you're a private land guy, you know, keep listening on this, because the basics and fundamentals of the of good access is the same whether you're on public or private. Really, the only difference, the difference is on public, you just have to do with what you've got. Mm-hmm. And then on private, you can actually create and enhance a specific, more optimal access route into specific locations. So that's really the difference, which is a pretty major difference, not gonna lie. Mm-hmm. It's a huge difference, but it's the fundamentals of the access is actually essentially the same.
Yep.
So when you're looking at access, it really just depends on time of year you're talking about, hunting, and general location of what you're talking about. So you want to access your stand location as best you can from the downwind side of things, right? If you can help it, don't walk to where your wind is blowing at your back, all the way into your that general location, right? Or having the wind blow in the general location where you expect the deer to be coming from and bedding. Mm-hmm. Right? So you could have a crosswind or even at times a backwind at certain parts of your access, because it doesn't actually affect where you expect the deer to be on your route in, right? And also realize what the thermals are going to be doing and the wind bend, essentially. And that's really getting into Big Woods kind of ridgy situations. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about actually using the thermals to your advantages and using a bend in the wind of sorts, of where it just creates a little bit of an eddy in certain areas, and where you can use the wind, where if you stay about, you know, 10 yards this direction closer to the ridge, you could use that wind to suck your scent up a draw or down a draw, you know, kind of away from where you expect deer to be coming from, right? So that there's ways that you can kind of cheat the wind on your way in and out. And I love using ditch access as much as I can, drainage ditch access, you know, old creek bottoms. Yep. So you've got wind direction and you've got sound, right? You want as silent of an access as you possibly can, so you're not bumping deer all on the way in. Deer are more likely to hear you from a longer distance than see your white light. Mm-hmm. Right? So that there's times, yes, I love walking in with a red light or a green light. I feel like it doesn't create as big of a presence, but there's times where it's more important to be as silent as possible. And if I have my red light, I just don't have that depth perception. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm tripping on rocks, I'm tripping on sticks, I'm making more noise than where if I would have just flipped on that white light, I could get there faster, get there more silently. Mm-hmm. And then just the overall presence is actually smaller. And then you've got scent, your ground scent. Probably, honestly, this is probably the most important, even over wind access. If you're accessing in the morning, you can get away with a little bit more of a funky wind, because you're trying to essentially beat the deer back to where you're going to be hunting them. Mm-hmm. Right? But if you're going in for a mid-morning or an afternoon hunt and you're hunting deer coming off a bed, that's essential that your wind is not blowing into that bedding area on your way in.
Right.
But ground scent will linger long past when you're done being there. Your hunt, your next hunt could be screwed up because you didn't have good access with scent purposes on your way in, mm-hmm. right? So grass brushing against you, your pant legs, brush, anything touching your bare hands, bare arms, anything and everything that can touch a limb, it's going to gather some kind of scent. Mm-hmm. If you're not taking care of your boots with scent control purposes, this is where I get super OCD about my scent control. And it's not because necessarily because of on stand scent, right? It's the scent that I'm leaving in and out of the woods.
Yep.
That's why I'm so OCD about my scent control. Cause if I'm on stand, I should be hunting the wind anyways. Right.
Exactly.
So but if you're, scent control isn't quite right, you're going to be leaving a lot of scent in and out of the area.
Yep.
So that's probably the most important thing I'd say, because you could be on a buck on his pattern and he just didn't show up that day, but there's a good chance you might shoot him tomorrow or in a couple of days. And then right around midnight, he's just walking around, cruising around, catches your scent, or the does start picking up on your scent, and they peg your location, they peg your route, and they start patterning you mm-hmm. faster than you're patterning them.
Yep. Yeah, that's a big one. And we talk about that a lot, too, on hunting specific locations. Just because you went in and didn't see any deer doesn't mean you didn't have an impact. And that's just what you're talking about, is that ground scent. And most of that, like, I try to wear rubber boots as long into the season as I can stand it for that reason. I tuck my pant legs into them. That way, there's not as much brushing around. You can keep the scent controlled on a rubber boot way better than you can your pant legs. So yep. There's just less of my pants hanging out to brush on sticks and leaves and whatever else, weeds. So I try to do that as long as I can. But also, it's, what are you doing, like, I'm the world's worst about wearing my pants in the truck. And like, I give Nate a hard time because he like literally strips down and gets dressed in the yep. freezing cold in the back of the truck every time, yep. right? But honestly, that's the safest way to do it. Now, when we're talking private land, for me, why it's not as big of a deal is because, and we'll talk about this a little bit next week, the way I create my access, I don't have to worry about that as much. Like I said, we'll talk about that next week. But especially on public, where you don't have the ability to go in there and mow paths or cut paths for you to walk through so you're not brushing up against stuff, you absolutely have to be paying attention to that because, like you said, it may not be that he caught you while you were hunting him, but at some point he cut your track later that night yes. or that next morning, and you still left some kind of impact, whether you knew it or not. And maybe you never see that deer, and that's why, and you don't know why, you think he just disappeared. Well, it could be maybe you went in there and hunted that spot 3 days in a row, and you haven't really paid that much attention to your scent control, or you got a little lazy with it towards the end, and finally he caught you. You were hunting him on, you know, days you just weren't seeing him, but he came through there at midnight and caught you, and now you're never going to see him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why the best hunt sit in a particular stand, the best time to kill that buck is on your first or second sit. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is just purely the lack of intrusion mm-hmm. as you go into that stand. The more often you access that location, the more scent you're going to be leaving, the more intrusion there is, the more opportunity not only to bump him while you're accessing or actually hunting, but bump him with your ground scent, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, on your way in. So see, he picks up something overnight. And even the local deer herd, even if he doesn't pick up your scent, those big mature does do.
Yep.
You know, and they might start changing their patterns slightly according to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And because they're changing their patterns, he'll slightly change his according to theirs, depending on time of year. And it just kind of a trickle effect.
Yep.
Right. So, but like you said, you know, you maybe can get away with a little bit more on private just because you have more control over what the access actually looks like compared to on public, where you kind of have to just do what you got to do.
Yep. Yep. I will say a second to that probably, and you mentioned it was, or is, when you're walking in, paying attention to where your wind's blowing as you're walking in. Cause a lot of times we get in that mindset of, okay, my wind is good for this stand today, but is it good to get to that stand today, right? You might have a borderline wind, or like you said, kind of a crosswind where you could hunt that stand, but now instead of it being solid all the way back there, you're blowing it across the bedding area and you're going in the evening, or you're blowing it across the feeding area as you're going in the morning. It's the same thing. Like, you wouldn't want to walk through those places at either of those times. You don't want your scent to go through there either. There's a reason guys go and they do drives and they scent bump deer on deer drives, right? That's exactly what they're doing. They're purposely walking with their wind blowing downwind into a bedding area to try to bump them. So if that's not what you're trying to do, you really have to pay attention to which way your wind's blowing and what's downwind of you the whole way to your stand and the whole way back, right? Even if you didn't kill anything. Yep. And that's a big one too. Access and egress, like, it's not just one way, right? You may go in there and have a bad sit. Now, if you get careless on the way out, maybe you're going to have 10 bad sits in a row because you hurt yourself on the way out. Whether it was just because you didn't want to go back out the hard way, you wanted to go the easy way, and that was through their feeding area, and you blow them all out, or it was with the wrong wind, or it was through some stuff where you were leaving too much scent. Entry and exit are both huge parts of, like, they make up access, right? And exit is one I think we forget about a lot of times too.
Oh, 100%. And something I think we also need to touch on too is timing. Mm-hmm. And that's something I learned a while back, and it's led me to that. There's times I'll get on stand. I will be at my tree stand 2 to 2.5 hours before daylight. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because I didn't have the control over how I could get to that particular stand. I had to kind of just, I had very few routes to be able to get in there. And unfortunately the routes I had were kind of with the deer movement on the way back. Mm-hmm. So if I was accessing at that normal hour time frame before daylight, or even an hour and a half, I was bumping deer on the way back, right? I couldn't avoid it. And then I upped my entry by 30 minutes to an hour, and I was no longer bumping deer back there, right? And then, so I was bumping deer all the way back there, horrible hunts, right? Same location, changed my timing on access, same access, but accessed it an hour earlier, which, you know, you're just, that's a bummer to get there that much earlier. That's just, it's more time on stand.
Right.
Is what it is, but I had great hunts.
Yeah. Makes it worth it.
It makes it worth it. So it's one of those locations that is very difficult to get to, but it was also very valuable to hunt from a public land basis because it was, like I said, difficult to get to. Mm-hmm. So, and part of it, what made it difficult to get to, a lot like with hunting public land, is it's not always the length of the walk.
Right.
Right. And just not like that, that could have been that it wasn't, but it could have been a 30-mile hike right into this location where you couldn't hardly access it without messing up your hunt. Mm-hmm. Right. That's why the deer are there. So it could have been a short walk, but same idea, where if I would have hunted that same area but accessed it better and just did a better job of hunting it than everybody else did, you would have seen the success, right? So it's that middle ground location that we're finding.
Yep.
And as it's just difficult to hunt and difficult to get to, which is why a lot of guys aren't staying and aren't hunting it very often, because they're just not seeing the success in that area. Not because they're not there, it's just because they haven't adjusted their access patterns to what is required for that specific location.
Yep. And I'll say this too, on the other side of that, it may be a situation where, especially on public, if the only way you can get to a spot is to walk along the edge of where they're feeding, especially, let's say, you know, Halloween week into the second week of November, maybe it's getting in there an hour, 2 hours later than normal, right?
Yes.
Let those deer clear that, and then maybe you're getting into the backside of that bedding area, right? Yep. To try to hunt them on the backside, either going in there late for a morning hunt or early for an evening hunt, however you want to look at it, whatever you're planning to do. But you can go in there let's say it's November 5th and you're going in there to hunt the rut, like you're pumped up, it's a great day.
Yeah.
But you go in there early thinking, man, I got to get back in there early because it's the rut. I want to be there when the sun comes up. But you walk through this food source, well, you blow all the does out. If you blow all the does out on November 5th, guess where the bucks are going to be? Not where you are. So
yep.
if you wait, let's say a couple hours or an hour after daylight, let that field clear and now go back in. Now you're hunting, especially that time of year, like prime time, talking 8 to noon, you know, you have that big window of opportunity still there for a good morning hunt, even though you didn't get to hunt right at sunup. And there's a lot of deer that get killed right there every year. So it's one of those things where the location that you're hunting and the how you have to access it is going to dictate when you should access it, right? Like you're saying, yeah. You might have to go earlier, you might have to go later. It's just you have to know what the situation is and what it calls for and then make that adjustment accordingly if you want to be successful. I mean, you can go in there. If you're just wanting to go back there and hunt in the morning because you want to see the sun come up, you don't care about seeing any deer, by all means, walk through that field in the middle of the night, yeah. Right? Or if you want to... You don't want to get up early and you want to go hunt that bedding area in the morning. You don't care if you see any deer or not. Go ahead and go in there late and bump them all out. But if you want to have success, that's the kind of stuff you have to pay attention to, especially when you're talking about public land, when you're competing with other hunters, when you're trying to get to those locations that may be hard to get to because that's where the deer are at.
Yes. And something to think about too is time of year also. So like you brought up a good point of sometimes you have to go late also. And that's very relatable to that early season through the October lull kind of hunt, because you really can't beat the deer back to their bedding that time of year. They're getting back to bed significantly earlier than they will.
Usually well before daylight.
Well before daylight. Yeah. So, and they're moving slower that time of year. So they're just kind of moseying around the area longer. So you can't really beat those deer back to bedding during that time of year. So that's where going in at like gray light or an hour after helps you get into those areas a little bit easier. And you can also see a lot more.
Yeah.
So you can kind of still hunt your way in and it of sorts kind of help manage your presence a little bit more, where maybe you see some deer and you can hunker down, let them pass, where at night, during the dark, you're not going to be able to see those deer.
Nope.
Make that hunting decision and then carry on your access. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's a good way to do it too, is sometimes you just still hunt your way in or still hunt your way out.
Yep.
You know, it really depends on the specific location that you're in and your observations of what the deer are doing in that specific location.
Yeah. What I would like to know, and there's no real way to figure it out, but how many bucks over the years that all of us haven't killed because they saw us or smelled us coming in and we had no idea they were there?
No idea.
Because if it's a doe, you know what she's going to do. She's going to lose her mind. She's going to stomp and she's going to blow and she's going to let everybody know that she's leaving. If it's a big mature buck, he's probably just going to turn around and go the other way. Nope. I mean, rarely. Occasionally, they'll blow at you, you know, especially if they're like super surprised, I think. Mm-hmm. A lot of times is when they'll blow. But if they know you're coming and they get uncomfortable, they're just going to leave, turn around and go the other way. And I'd say there's a lot of bucks that over the years we've all not shot because that's happened and we had no idea, right? We might have been 50 yards from that deer and in the dark and never known it.
Yep.
And what you bring up a good point too about still hunting and being able to see. And another part of access, and you kind of mentioned a little bit with like the wind and stuff on a bend, is you started getting terrain a little bit. You can absolutely use terrain features not only for your wind but also for visibility, right? To keep the deer from seeing you. One like no-brainer for me is if you can get in the bottom of a creek, it's the next best thing to literally being underground. Is if you can get in that creek and get right up to the tree you're going to hunt in, there's almost no better access than that. But it's the same thing on the bottom of a ridge. You don't want to walk right down the top of the ridge, you know, where they can skyline you. Just stay on that other third of it if you're walking in. There's a lot of terrain features you can use for access as well.
Yeah, and that's where this guy here on the bottom, my Kansas buck, that was a difficult but textbook type of access. It was that situation. It was an old creek bed. But where I was hunting him, there really was only one way in, and then you fork out to your different locations up on the ridges, mm-hmm. right? But because there was still only one way in and one way out, it was difficult to, but so you just had to make sure that you were staying in that creek bed, right? Walking on the rocks so that the rocks keep my scent down. Mm-hmm. And I only split up off that creek at the very last moment mm-hmm. that I had to, right? And, you know, if there's any water, that's even better because it just kind of helps cut yep. any kind of scent trail. And then too, like you said, you're essentially underground. Yeah. I mean, you can walk with your light on, you know, obviously I like it as dim as possible mm-hmm. all the time, no matter what I'm doing, especially within that last quarter mile
yeah.
to half mile of the hike. But, it really helps cut down the opportunity of deer seeing you mm-hmm. while you're accessing. And then also it helps kind of muffle the sound.
Absolutely.
The sound won't travel quite like it will if you're walking that top of the ridge mm-hmm. in crunchy leaves, where if you're kind of down below, you just don't hear, it doesn't travel nearly as much as it will if you're walking up on top, making a bunch of noise.
Yep. And that's something too, that when you combine that, whether it's a creek bottom, whether it's on the backside of that ridge, whether it's down a thick edge of a field, right, with a lot of brush on it or a cedar patch or something like that. If you combine those terrain features with the right wind, it's pretty bulletproof because they're not going to smell you because you got the wind in your favor. They're not going to see you because you're using the terrain the right way. And they're not going to hear you. They're not nearly as likely to hear you because not only are you keeping your sound down in that creek or on the other side of that cover, but the wind's blowing it the other way too, you know, so it's not carrying as far. That's something where even if the wind is not catching them like on your scent directly, if it's blowing your sound down into a valley, like there's a better chance they're going to hear you, you know, because it's echoing mm-hmm. throughout there. It's just a combination of all of those things makes for really solid access. And that's what really kills big deer. I mean, we all kind of know when we look at a map, like, hey, that's the place I need to hunt, right? Like, a lot of people can figure that out. And if they can't, then we've done series on that too, and we'll do some more in the future. But you kind of know, like, the pinch points and the funnels and everything, and you can see, you know, a good spot when you see it. Maybe you don't, but a lot of people do. But it's, how do I get in here and how do I get out of here? And that can absolutely make or break your hunt. I think it does make or break a ton of hunts.
And I think that is the difference between the guys who are successful on a regular basis on public and the guys who struggle mm-hmm. is it's not that they're choosing different locations. You know what I mean? Because there's only so many pinch points. There's only so many pinch points. There's only so many saddles. There's only so many edges that, you know, there's only so many of those areas in a specific, on a specific property.
Right.
And for the most part, with a basic, you know, whitetail knowledge, you kind of know what those look like, you know, mm-hmm. so people are attracted to those areas. Now, that's where it comes down to, what are you doing on your end for the hunt to beat that buck in that area,
yeah.
right? Because he could use that funnel, even though that funnel is being hunted, he could use that funnel on a regular basis, but he knows how to know if that funnel is dangerous today or not, mm-hmm. right? He has his bedding set up in a manner and his access set up in a manner, knows exactly how the wind and thermals work in that area, and he will bust you unless you can just ever so slightly beat him at it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's they're going to win the biggest majority of the time.
Yes.
But I feel like the more attention you pay to detail, and especially when it comes to access, that is what makes a difference between being consistently successful on big mature bucks on public, because they just don't let you get away with as much.
Right.
They just won't.
Nope.
They've been bumped too many times, and they know.
Yep.
They have it fine tuned. So it's just kind of one of those things where you just need to make sure that access is number one.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
To me, that's the biggest difference.
Sorry. No, that's the biggest difference. We talk a lot about public land to private land. A lot of things that work on public work on private. And there's a lot of There's a lot of things that work the same on either one. The biggest difference to me between the deer is just how pressured those deer are on public and how used to people they are and how they're able to figure them out. Because if you're hunting your private land, right, they shouldn't really know you're there, right? But no matter how careful you are, those deer likely know that someone has been there or is there. Now, they still are living there because that's where they're at, right? But you don't have control over everybody that goes in there. So some Joe Blow might go in there, and now that deer knows it's being hunted. So you have to be that much more precise and that much better and smarter about what you're doing every time to be successful, because those deer on the public land are generally way more pressured, way, I don't know if it's smarter, but they've definitely got things, they definitely, so like on private land, maybe a deer is more worried about like coyotes and bobcats and whatever, those kind of predators are getting hit by a car, right? He's staying away from the road. On public, he's way more worried about people than he is on private.
And that's something think about if you got a three strike kind of scenario, is if you bump that buck three times consistently, the buck's going to disappear for a while. Right. He ain't coming back. So on private, you bump him, you're like, I probably have two more, right? I've got a little give. On public, you need to plan on that buck already being bumped once or twice. Which means you need to be as perfect as possible and hope that you're not the reason that he leaves the area. Try not to be the person that makes him leave. You know what I mean? So you just need to know that he's already been bumped. And so whether it's by you or not, he's already been bumped. Plan on him being bumped already multiple times. And you just need to do a better job of getting in there without bumping him, so you can fill that tag where the other guys did not, basically.
You're going in there with a two-strike approach every time, right? You're not taking the big swing that you would on first or second strike, because some guy may have already put you in a hole, so you have to go in there and be careful and really be ready to put a ball in play, right? Because you don't want to, you don't want that third strike to be what you did.
Why precision hunts are so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why being as precise as possible with your timing on your hunts, when you choose to access that particular stand, that is ultra important. You know, because if you, that's where the idea of you can't shoot deer while sitting on the couch, well, you can keep yourself from killing deer while if you're out hunting.
Yep, absolutely.
You choose to access that spot with low quality weather versus chilling or going somewhere else, and then go into that spot once or twice and killing that buck because that the conditions are perfect. And then that was the first time in there. He's not shy of your presence yet, and you get a shot on him.
Yep. And that's, I think we can kind of wrap it up here after I mention Rodney Hawkins from RG Outdoors in Midwest Farm and Land. If you guys haven't heard the podcast and don't know about him, he is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. So if you're looking for maybe some private ground to do some of the stuff we're going to talk about next week, you can give him a call. He'll help you get set up on that. Or if you have private ground you're looking to sell, especially in Illinois, throughout the Midwest, he can help you out. He knows people that know people too. So even if you're not in his area, he can get you in contact with somebody. He's also got his own business, RG Outdoors, where he's got all kinds of products, Tacticam, trail cameras. He's got Radix hunting products. He's got e-bikes. He's got Radix and Rhinos blinds. He's got new stuff coming in all the time. So you can check them out, RG Outdoors on Facebook. And you can give him a call at 618-925-3153, and he can tell you all about what he's got going on too. But to wrap this one up, I want to work off of what you were just saying. It's something to keep in mind when you're hanging your sets on public, right? And when you're going in and finding those spots. Keep your access in mind, and I'm setting this stand up to be able to hunt it on the perfect day, but I also need to be able to access it on that perfect day. So if the stand sets up, good for a northwest wind with that front moving through with the pressure going up, but I can't get there on a northwest wind, maybe you need to sit somewhere else, right? You need to find the combination of what's going to work for your access and your stand location when you're going in there and looking for places to put your stands this summer. And as we get into late summer and you're doing your scouting and stuff like that, keep your access in mind. Make sure you're paying attention to it, because that could be the difference of killing that deer or not. And it can absolutely make or break your hunt. It can make or break a spot. And if you don't have good access, you're really not doing yourself any favors putting that stand there.
Very true. 100%. Absolutely, bud.
All right. We're going to get out of here this week, get you guys into the weekend. And then next week, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about all the things you can do to make this even easier on private land. Because there are a lot of things. I think it's something that is overlooked even when we're talking about habitat improvements. Because there's literally a huge number of things that you can do to improve access on private land. And we're going to get into that next week. So for Austin, Tactical Approach Outdoors, make sure you check out everything he's got going on over there. And for me, see you guys next Friday.